Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Basketball fans, the NBA podcast is back. Usually it's called the College College Ball Show. We'll just call it the Ball Show since we're knee-deep into the NBA, so knee-deep that we are literally finally here at the NBA final stage. This Thursday it kicks off. We're here Monday breaking this thing down. If this is the first time you're listening to the show, like I said, it's called the College Ball Show because late August, we go with college football all the way through the national championship. Then we go college basketball, take that all the way to the national championship, and then we switch gears to the NBA playoffs, and we keep it going for the draft. We'll do a draft show, and we'll also do, of course, this will be probably the first week of July. It seems like it gets extended a couple of days because of so many meetings across the country, but we'll do a free agency show as well. Anyway, we're here live on a Monday. Happy Memorial Day to everybody. Obviously, a big thanks for all of those who sacrificed their lives in the past. A great number, you know, a lot of my soldier friends. In fact, I was just on Facebook looking at a couple of things and commenting on stuff like that. And one of my soldier friends said, "Hey, you know, you don't have to talk. You don't have to thank me. I'm still alive. You know what I mean? Like, I understand it. I appreciate it. But thank those who had sacrificed their lives, because that's really what this day is about." And it kind of made me think that's true, even though on a daily basis, men and women, not just here but all across the world, you know, definitely protect us and have for so many years. But, you know, a lot of times that goes unappreciated or not appreciated enough in general or at times forgotten. And, you know, you can have your opinion. That's what they're fighting for as well and have fought for in the past. You can have an opinion on whatever you want, but you know, what's not up for debate is the sacrifice. So just want to get that out of the way. But here we are. I'm Chris. He's Marshall. I'm bringing in my co-host in just a second. Here we are at the NBA Finals, and it's a trilogy. We were just speaking off air, Marshall and I, saying, you know, I believe this is the first time a trilogy has taken place back to back to back, not just three times in the finals. Obviously, we know, you know, the Celtics and the Lakers in the 80s matched up a bunch of times. And so the intrigue is huge. And obviously the NBA needs this right now, you know, because we've had, you know, it was a great regular season, but a poor playoffs overall. Obviously there was some great games mixed in there and yada, yada, yada. But overall, when, you know, one team doesn't lose and the other only lost once, well, that kind of tells you right there. We did get some game sevens. We had some close games, but just not nearly enough. But so this is a really cool kind of a one of a kind thing. And the extra detail in it, if you look at 2015, 2016, and now this year, 2017 matchup, you know, with the Lakers and the Celtics, you would have bit players that came into the fold whether it was like, okay, we're going to not have this guy on our team, or this guy went to the bench because this younger guy played better defense, or, you know, the little fitting your roster to go head-to-head. And like many ways, you could see the Lakers and Celtics did that in minor ways. But you can really tell that both of these teams have, over the years, the last 2 years especially, have shaped their roster for one another. I mean, it's clear as day. It's clear as day. And each, it's not the roster per se always. It's about who actually was on the court. And, man, it's like night and day in a sense through all three of these matchups. So that's kind of cool, too. It's not just the fact that they're going head-to-head for 3 years and it's tied 1-1. It's the fact that there's so much. It just adds intrigue to it, no doubt about it. And I got to admit, I'm very excited for this because of the style of play. We spoke a week ago about it. We spoke about it before. And I do think the style of play will be one of entertainment, offense at times, pretty solid defense. Obviously, when you have this many three-point shots that are going to put up, you're going to have some ugly moments. But the thing about three-pointers and when you're missing them, it generally, especially with these two teams, it generally leads to a break. It generally keeps the speed of the game because somebody's taking it and going down, and it's a long rebound, so they don't have to even mess around in the post sometimes. Sometimes it just pops out, and they're off to the races. So even when these teams are struggling, it's still shooting from the outside anyway. It's still going to be a great pace based off the amount of three-point shooting. And Marshall, I'm going to bring in my co-host here. It's pretty crazy. I talked about how, obviously, in the offseason, and we'll get into this as well, the addition of Durant did have to, you know, as much talent as Cleveland had, they had to scramble some too. And they had to do it not just in the offseason, but you could tell they played 23 different guys in their starting lineup, and probably about five of those guys aren't on the team anymore. You know, they had to tweak the roster, and people thought, oh my gosh, you know, why do they got to do all these trades? And it's like, well, I hear you. I mean, I hear you. They did win last year, but you'd be a fool to think that they wouldn't have to mess around with their roster. It has to, but Marshall, the amount of three-point scorers, shooters in general, on that's going to be clocked into the game is really damn near unheard of at a high level. You know, we've seen some other teams in the past shoot some threes on all four positions, and obviously that's becoming more and more, especially just outside shooting, not necessarily that your four-man has to shoot threes, although in another 5 years that might be the case, but the amount of shooters that will be stepping on the floor that can just go off and hit threes. I'm going to call for the record for threes being broke, and I'd probably put some money on it in this one for the finals. I really would as far as attempts.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have too many people that are shy. I think that at moments in the playoffs this year, Cleveland's offense has looked extraordinary, above average. I don't know whatever word you want to use.
Well, I wouldn't use extraordinary and above average together. I'm just messing with you. Because extraordinary kind of takes you over the act. You're a teacher, right? That's an A+, right?
Yeah, true. Well, I mean, I guess they've had some crazy moments and some like pretty good moments. Due to the fact that no one in the East really had a Andre Iguodala to give that man respect for how he's been able to try to guard LeBron in the finals. Without having a guy in the East that could really try to guard him, it really has opened up just kind of endless three-point opportunities for the Cavs. Kevin Love has had moments in the playoffs where, you know, as a Cavs fan, you're kind of like, wow, this is a nice change of pace, because there were moments where, speaking of the trilogy, where sometimes Cavs fans want Kevin Love to go. There are situations where maybe him and LeBron were buddies. Like, he didn't hang out with the team. You know, he's always kind of had a little bit of a different personality, even starting from college. I mean, you know, and now he got hurt, and now all of a sudden he's like the piece. It's like, oh, we finally found a spot for him to fit in. And now it's like, wow, he's doing something for us that is awesome. And they're going to need him to step up his game with the team they're facing. So I guess when I think of threes and the Cavs, at first I come to think about, you know, Kevin Love, because he's kind of been a different dynamic in the finals for every year. And this year, it's actually an advantage for them. And then you have, you know, Kyrie, who I guess you can consider him a three-point shooter, but what he does just dribbling with the ball is just been remarkable. Obviously, being a Carolina Tar Heel fan, I've never been too fond of a Duke basketball player, and I honestly won't forget, and I guess until the final start on Thursday, of what he did last year. Because obviously, LeBron is the best, and they did win the finals last year, but there was none of that happening just with LeBron by himself. I truly thought, I mean, it kills me to say this, but just to be honest, because we're doing a podcast and wanted to deliver high quality, Kyrie went to a level last year that I didn't think he had. I mean, LeBron is, we know how good he is, and he somehow gets better and better. But last year, it wasn't even so much three-point shooting, it was LeBron and Kyrie. And now to add in Love and a guy like Channing Frye, Deron Williams, who can't, you know, who can afford to hit open shots, especially, you know, they're veterans, and if no one's guarding them, you know, we'll see. Now, obviously, the one counteractive statement to this is the Cavaliers in the three-point barrage is going to now face a team that can play better defense against them, there we go, with Golden State Warriors. Now, clearly, Indiana was kind of a mess with LeBron. That led to many open shots. Boston, I think, they just had a really bad matchup with Cleveland, and Cleveland just kind of kicked the crap out of them. Every game in Boston wasn't even close, and you had LeBron being sick for a game, but for whatever reason, Boston did not match up that well against Cleveland. But now Cleveland, for once, will have to maybe execute a little bit more. Not that their three-point percentage clip is going to go down drastically, Chris, but you're going to be facing a team where if you swing the ball from side to side or have three to four passes or go wing to wing or cross court, Draymond Green or Iguodala or Klay Thompson are going to be in your face. The one thing I've always enjoyed watching the Warriors, who are the team I cheer and root for in the NBA, is how they manage to play like just makeup defense. So if for some reason like Klay and Draymond trap a guy on the right side of the court and the ball swings to the left side, all of a sudden someone else is over there getting ready to give that guy a hand in his face before he gets off a free shot. So while I do think the three-point shooting will not stop with the Cavs because they have no reason to, that's kind of in their DNA, I do think that the clip will go down because you're not going to get wide-open threes. Again, I'm not saying that the Cleveland three-point shooting, Chris, is going to fall apart, but it will be curious to see, you know, a contested shot in NBA and a percentage of making a wide-open shot is much different. Lastly, I'll swing it back to you. They were talking about Toronto. I was listening to some people and about how Toronto missed a ton of wide-open shots against Cleveland in the playoffs. And, you know, wide open shots are shots that you cannot miss. If you want to beat a team in the playoffs, if you're wide open, that's a shot that must go in. And Cleveland has done a good job of making wide open shots. So now let's see how they do facing a team that if you get a wide open shot against Golden State, you better cash in because it doesn't happen often, my friend.
Well, and obviously, you're a Golden State fan too, so we have to talk about Golden State. I mean, they have like the toughest matchups on the way to the run either. I mean, neither side really were threatened. I mean, San Antonio would have, but we know ultimately what San Antonio without Parker and especially Leonard. You want to talk about defense and a difference maker? That wouldn't have been some walk in the park either. We knew neither side was really going to get a big challenge. But what I'm saying about the three, it's not that, I mean, Golden State gets open threes too. A lot of that is passing. It's not all defense. Mm-hmm. It's passing. And both teams can pass the you-know-what out of the ball. I mean, the way the ball moves now for both teams, and not just Golden State, whereas the ball moved so beautifully, I think you could put it, in the probably the last 4 years at times with that team, Golden State. But now, I guess what I'm saying about the three-pointers, to have Braun and three-point shooters around him on the court, that's a different dynamic than they've had, a much different dynamic. So it's about finding the open guy. It's not about, well, now they're going to get guarded at the three. Well, it's hard to guard them when Braun's crashing, when Kyrie and Braun are crashing to the rim, because you got to do something about it too. So you're going to have to get off a shooter. You know what I mean? So I guess that's what I mean. I'm not sitting there saying, when I say attempts, that's just because both teams, you know, that's just to kind of stress the amount of three-point shoots or shots that they're actually taking. Cleveland's taking a crazy amount. I'm not saying they're going to be there, but I still think I do stand by a record attempts. Although I think it may be in a game or through four games or something like that, because I don't see this going seven. So I think that would hamper it now that I really think about like an overall, you know, the record for overall series. I take that back because I don't think it'll go seven. You never know. It may not go six. You never know. I think LeBron is the type of player, him and Kyrie will you to a game. You know what I mean? No doubt about it. But you have to, when you say it wasn't just all LeBron, to win a championship, and that's what people don't understand. I know you understand this, but a lot of people don't understand these days that over and over again. They're so caught up on the MJ LeBron stuff now. It's just like, guys, Jordan had his time. That time's over. It's gone. He is the best player. I mean, there's obviously arguments in there for the best player of all time. But Jordan seems like if you're going to go with somebody, if you had A through F, it's multiple choice, you're probably going to put Jordan on that line, right? There's just no doubt about it. But there's things that he did better. Like, he's the best scorer from a guard position. But is he the best scorer of all time? I don't know, man. Kareem and Will, much higher percentage when you just got to turn right around. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's kind of strange. You know what I mean? Because back in the day, you couldn't triple team somebody like that before they got the ball and stuff like that. So, but my whole point is you have to have other people. And when we say the role for Love has changed than it was last year, well, last year, you know, first of all, 2 years ago, he didn't play a minute in that series. He played two good games, I'd say, the first one and the last one, and that's when he was kind of going back to his roots as a rebounder, because he's a good passer, too, especially, we all know the touchdown passes. He's been doing that since college, you know what I mean? The outlet pass way down the floor. He's been great at that. But just overall, he is a good passer on the court. When he's focused on making the best play, the guy can make really smart decisions and take smart shots, no doubt about it. But the three-point shooting is finally getting added naturally now, and LeBron is a guy that will feature it. He'll go to the hot hand. You got to be able to go to the hot hand, especially if you're going to beat a team, you know, with the four all-stars like this. But anytime you win a championship, you got to go to the hot hand when it's there. But to have Kyrie, who played a game in 2015, just one, then never came back, and to have Love finally get it, Marshall, it's almost like, you know, when he got hurt for those two games – and then they brought him off the bench, and it seemed like in game one and game seven, he finally realized in this series, it's not always like that, because actually if you look at last year and the year prior before he got hurt, he actually was scoring more. I think he's like 17 or 18 and like 11 boards or something like that this year, but he was scoring more. There's times to score, but there's also time just to be a good basketball player and do what you do and play your role. And if that's getting 14 boards, then you got to go get 14 boards. If him and Thompson can rebound like that, that's that they got to take advantage of that. They have to take advantage of that size. The problem is, though, as we get in to matchups, Marshall, the problem is Draymond Green, you know what I mean, is not – first of all, he can't guard him. And second of all, it does contain that. However, you know, he's got to be able to hit those threes because Draymond's going to come off of him at times to stop Kyrie and to be – and to stop LeBron, you know, at times too. Obviously, we know we could talk about matchups, and he's going to go head-to-head, and Durant and LeBron, and we've seen that in the finals. We've seen that in the NBA. Usually, LeBron has, an advantage, although he's never faced him on a team that has this many guys around him either. So, therefore, that takes some pressure off Durant as well, and it kind of opens up some things to where maybe, you know, maybe LeBron could get some help, whereas he can't get help now because on defense I'm speaking of, because you got to stay on that shooter and vice versa. So it's really, really interesting. And like I said, the play, the style, I'm really looking forward to it. But in the back of my head, there's a reason why they're a 2-1? Is it like a plus 200, plus 210? Plus 220. I don't even know. I haven't checked the last 3 days or something. I remember when.
Yeah, it's
I think I checked
right
3 or 4 days ago.
Plus
around that.
And Golden State's minus 260. So.
Okay. So, I mean, let's just put it this way. Before we get into predictions and all that, I mean, if I'll be honest. I think the people that are predicting Cleveland to win don't like. And by the way, before I say that, we got to get the computers involved in this, Marshall, right? We got to get the computers involved. The ESPN BPI gives the Cleveland a 7% chance, and 538 gives them a 10% chance, right? So that's not good. But anyway, it's one. I think Marshall. It's the most excited I've been for a finals that I think, barring injury, and I know you're not going to like this, or a major choke, I'm nothing's in the bag, but if Golden State doesn't win this, I'll be shocked if everybody's on the court. Obviously, if Curry or Durant goes out, you know, I favor Cleveland then. I favor them pretty strong. But it's kind of strange because it almost feels like the finals of the past where the Western Conference was supposed to be the finals. Obviously, we didn't get that because of, you know, Leonard. But it has that feel where, you know, you still have LeBron. You still have a great team. But I don't know. It just has that feel. I'll tell you one thing we have to admit is Cleveland, if you flash back to May in April before the playoffs, and what they win, 52 games or something like that, through the amount of people that played, I think it was 23 that came on the court, which is a lot when you only have five at once on the court. When you look at some of the injuries, Love and J.R. Smith this year, when you look at the rest – factor. And then down the stretch, we documented it much like they have on the NBA telecast plenty. You know, you can put it to 20 games, but really the last 10 games of the regular season in that fourth quarter struggle. But I'll say this, they're definitely honed in no matter who they're playing. Cause they were still the regular season's the regular season. You're playing shitty teams all the time. Or mediocre teams most of the time, right? I mean, majority of your games are actually against either poor or mediocre teams. Obviously, I mean, half of them don't make the playoffs. And as we know, you know, 16 of them make the playoffs, you know, more than half of them. That's how it is in the NBA and NHL. More than half the teams technically make the playoffs. So that's nothing new. But it is kind of strange that I really enjoyed this NBA, before we get into predicting and the matchups and all that and keys, I really enjoyed this season. I really did, because although considering I wasn't, you know, I do think the Durant situation of him leaving and how he left in the matchup, how he left, obviously, that's something we hadn't seen, where a team, he was up 3-1 and, you know, that whole scenario. And not just that, but they had a young core that had actually really started to shine just last year. And so it was really confusing to me to be like, wow, dude. And I understand Westbrook and all that stuff, but considering that, it did weaken the West, right? For most of the year, Clay's team was under 500 for most of the year. And that's a strange thing in the West, when top seven were usually 50 teams. So that has messed around with some things. Some trades and some free agency has weakened. I mean, look at Portland. A couple of years ago, you know, they lose 4 out of their 5 starters. You know what I mean? That was a team that would have been something to reckon with. So the West is weaker. Overall, the playoffs suffered from it. And like I said, a top team that challenged the you-know-what, I mean, it went to Game 7, so obviously they challenged Golden State last year. That still pisses me off in a sense as a fan, but I did enjoy the actual season way more than I have. And I know you're a Golden State fan, so you've been enjoying these regular seasons for quite some time. But I mean, as a whole of the sport, I really enjoyed the teams, right? The individual, the Hardens, the Leonards, and obviously the Westbrooks, I really enjoyed the season. And that is something that a lot of people say, oh, the NBA is in trouble because of this and that. You know, if the season's more enjoyable, that helps overall. Now, obviously, the rest factor really came in as San Antonio started this thing off. And, you know, when teams do it, now it seems like other – if you're not deep, then you have to do it. You know, like a LeBron situation. Go look at his minutes. He was playing 38 minutes. He was like third in the league in minutes at this age. You damn right he had to sit some games. You may not like it, but you'd be silly and ignorant to think that he didn't have to sit some games, because he played more minutes than he has in quite some time this year. And obviously – what Cleveland did worked, because here they are and they're fresh. But a variety of teams are doing that now, and really the Spurs started it out. There's no doubt about it. The Spurs started the theme, and you got to do what you got to do. But I do have to say, it's still kind of, now that we're here, people say, well, you know, people don't like super teams. But if the ratings tell you a total, complete different story. You know, the ratings will tell you that America loves a winner. They love to hate a winner, but they love it. The ratings show that. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the Lakers, they had Kobe and Shaq, and then just a variety of perfect players. They were just dominant. It was boring. Yeah, maybe to your hardcore fan, but you know what? The hardcore fan was already tuned in. They already got them. They're going to – me and you are watching this shit. They got us. It doesn't matter. They got us, Marshall. But I'm talking about the rating. You know what I mean? I'm talking about the overall rating. And you could see then. You could just see it. This is – people love dominance, or they love to hate dominance. So they're going to watch Golden State. And, you know, I think the combination of having the best season ever record-wise last year and then losing 3-1, that obviously – there was some, because, you know, I think a lot of the hate came from them saying, a lot of the press talk, like doing what they do as far as we're knee deep stuck in this MJ LeBron debate for no freaking reason. You know what I mean? Or not good enough reasons, this amount of it. You know what I mean? This amount of people on Twitter and Facebook going back and forth on LeBron and MJ is just silly. you're going to have that. You're going to have that, but the amount of it, Marshall. But I really think that the press, when someone's – you're going to have to write something about Golden State, not just setting the record, but then, of course, comparing them to years past, comparing them to the Bulls team. You know what I mean? You're going to – it's going to happen. But the amount of that also built in that, oh, this – hey, they're a great team and all, dude. I've enjoyed them for the last couple of years, but this is some bullshit now. They couldn't beat the Bulls, which I don't think they could, but we talked about that last year. We broke it down, of course. I mean, we did talk about it, but the amount it gets discussed, I think that's what hurt them. And then when you give up a 3-1 lead like that, I think that people piled on. And then now, obviously, to add Durant in this situation, you can't help the but to pile on. You know, I'm not a hater. I don't hate just to jump the you know, with the in crowd, but I say a lot of things that just say it across the board. I don't really – I just look at every case in point differently. You know what I mean? Just like in boxing, it's fight by fight, fighter by fighter. I don't judge a promotional company and just go with it. A lot of people do that. That's some stupid stuff. It doesn't make sense. Oh, I'm going to watch HBO instead of Showtime. I'm going to watch Showtime. Dude, are you a fan or what are you? They're not paying you to do this stuff. You know what I mean? You're not making money off this. So I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, just to bring it back, it is kind of interesting. You have the most hated player with probably the most loved and hate team now. And that's something that you don't normally get as well. I guess what I'm saying, the depth of this matchup, even though on paper it looks like Golden State should probably win in 5 or 6, it's still the intrigue, the amount of, you know, don't let it be a close first game, Marshall. Oh, my God. If it's a close first game, holy crap, people are going to just jump on it and just wait till they get back to Cleveland. You know, it's don't let them lose one of the first two games either. What do you think about and obviously it's kind of interesting too, because here I gave the general public's look at it, because like I said, Golden State gets a lot of love too. Curry, a lot of people like Curry, and it's hard not to. It's definitely hard not to. Obviously, Thompson, you know, has been lost in the shuffle at times, but he, you know, he can go off, as we know, at any time, but he has been lost in the shuffle. And when you add a, you know, a former MVP, that's going to happen too. Let's talk about the blend, because before, you know, during the season, I thought you made some good points as far as your summary of the season in your team about you still have to have Curry being the focal point about having the ball. And it was a mixture of trying to get Durant in there, but not too much Durant. It seems like right now they've really found their groove. I mean, Thompson, yeah, I get it. But overall, they found their groove between each other, because right now Durant has blended in nicely, and he's freaking going off. You know what I mean? So kind of give your take on that and see where we are, because I remember, you know, heading into the playoffs, you were like, well, we got to make sure that Curry has the ball enough. And blend it, you know what I mean, rather than be like, all right, let's just focus him for this full quarter type stuff or force something. That's not a team that forced much beyond like half-court threes. They forced them at times. But, you know, for good reason when you got some of their three-point shooters. That's obvious. But talk about some of the things overall, and then let's get into some of these the matchups, the importance, and then we're going to predict this thing.
Yeah, you know, I've watched the playoffs this year, but it now it's kind of like the time to like really like gear in. I mean, last year, I'll never forget. I was scared to death that we were going to lose to Oklahoma City, and if it wasn't for the man Klay Thompson, we would have. And so now it finally and everyone takes stuff for granted, but. I mean, when Kawhi got hurt game one, you're like, okay, well, I mean, just pray for no injuries, take care of business, let's go. So, and I do, you know, knock on wood, I do like the fact that everyone is healthy, because we, you know, in sports you always have the debate. Well, if so-and-so was healthy, we could have won it this year. And I hate to ever take that stance, but sometimes if you love a team so much and your team's giving you so much all year as a fan, then a player goes down, you're like, well, crap. And that, you know, but anyways, I'm hoping the injury conversation won't come up. You never know. But as of now, for all intents and purposes, no, people are healthy. In regards to my Golden State Warriors, or the team I love to cheer for, I do think they have found a nice way to team up Durant and Stephen Curry. Obviously, you know, you can't have like too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, you know, there were moments this year where I'm being nitpicky, but I felt like Durant was kind of trying to take over a team that isn't his. He might be a better player than Curry, but you know, you don't just come into a new organization and take over the reins. And this is my opinion, and maybe it's wrong, but from my stance, of Curry's built this team up, so you don't really want to kick out the king, I guess you could say. But I think now we've found a way where, when you've watched playoff games of Golden State in the playoffs, there's been moments where Curry's gone off, or Durant's gone off, or one's on the bench, so the other gets a chance to go back and forth, back and forth. And I think it is kind of an interesting dynamic, because on one hand, to mention Durant in another situation, the biggest issue that Scott Brooks had of coaching Durant and Westbrook in Oklahoma City was he always got crucified for taking them out at the same time of the game. Or how do you manage subbing of two great players? Well, from a Golden State perspective, it's much easier to do the subbing and making people melt, because if you put Durant on the bench and let Curry have time to shine, Curry's got three or four guys next to him that can help him out. So I think the process of molding the two together has finally started to click. It's not nearly as difficult, I guess, as a job as Scott Brooks have, because if you actually do sit down Durant and Curry at the same time, you can turn to Draymond Green or Klay Thompson. So despite having all these pieces with a lot of skill, I think they finally have found a good rhythm. I think part of that, fortunately, but unfortunately, because never want to take pride in anyone being injured by any means, but Curry finally did find his groove at the end of the regular season, because Durant did suffer his, like, minor MCL sprain. And after Durant was out for, I believe, give or take, like a month or a month and a half, I can't remember exact time, but Curry finally fell into his groove of hitting his threes and kind of getting his swagger back. You saw a rise in numbers. And he is kind of a guy that plays with some attitude to him that is noticeable. So I like that everything appears to be meshing well together. I also think that, while I will never say anyone could take what Bogut did, because I think Andrew Bogut, who's on Golden State, is such a crafty person. I don't think that Zaza Pachulia or JaVale McGee replace his skill and mindset and craftiness. I do like how those guys have kind of made a minor name for themselves. There was a couple of games in the playoffs this year where JaVale McGee has literally scored 12 points within 5 minutes. You're like, how in God did that just happen? Like, we're talking about JaVale McGee. Like, he's going to score points for Golden State now too. I believe it was game 2 or 3 against the Spurs where he literally had like 12 points in like 5 minutes or 6 minutes. You're like, dude, if we need to work on guarding Durant and Curry and Klay at the three-point line, and we come out to meet them, and they dribble past us, now you put to JaVale McGee, well, what in God's name are we supposed to do on defense? You know, if he's their seventh option and he can score, you know, let's just...
And it was in the right bucket, too. Like, he actually scored for Golden State, you know what I mean? Which is really mind-blowing. No, I'm just kidding. I've always liked his hustle. You can never deny his hustle. You just, you know, his focus, I guess. I wouldn't call him dumb. I just think it's focus. He's got to harness it. You know what I mean? I think that's where it is. He's got to harness that, and he has, definitely. I'm glad you brought him up.
Fitting in that role has been perfect, and Zaza Pachulia, it's kind of like a poor man's Bogut. He's not afraid to get physical. He mops up under the hoop. Now, his rim protection's not even close, but he's at least tried to adapt in that role. And, you know, as much pride as every NBA player has, Zaza Pachulia knows that he's not, like, the first, second, or third option when he's on the court. But if he gets the ball near the hoop, he better put it up and better go in. So I will say.
And he can get underneath you on defense. You know what I mean? He could really get underneath you. I'm just kidding. Actually, I'm not. No, he is a good hustle player, too.
And so, obviously, what I'm talking about, like, it's the riches. They have all the pieces. And with that, you are expected to bring home the title. They are a strong favorite. And honestly, if you're in Vegas, I was checking my phone, and I'm not saying put a fortune on this, but when I saw the odds of them sweeping 7-1, I'm not saying that's a lock, but 7-1 odds for a sweep.
What's five?
What would be the dumbest bet in the world?
I think that Braun is wins a game along with Kyrie. You know, like they can will a game, but I wonder what's five. Because I definitely
I think
money
it was plus 240 plus 240 plus 220 for Golden State in five. So,
okay.
But just for a gambling perspective, I mean, hell, the 7-1 odds, you know, it's a risk, but you're betting a dog, and it. So I do like the maturation factor. Obviously, that has gone together smoothly, or more smoothly you can ask for. But now, you know, they have their hands full, too. I will say there's a couple of little X factors, and you've mentioned people over the past. I do think from the Cleveland perspective, facing Golden State, you have better three-point shooters, but you're also, unfortunately, not having names of Mozgov and Dellavedova. So to switch it up a little bit, now clearly Cleveland has found an offensive rhythm of three-point shooters.
Who were non-factors last year, by the way. 2 years ago, they were factors. They were factors when No Love and Kyrie were there. But last year, Dellavedova and Mozgov barely played, dude. I'm just sorry not to cut you off.
Well, I just think that at least from the, you know, years prior, at least they had defensive possibilities. So it was an option where Dellavedova was pesky and Mozgov could at least be, you know, a guy that could try and protect the rim. I think that now Tristan Thompson is going to have his hands incredibly full this series. I mean, you're going to have to battle against maybe Draymond, battle against Petrulia, battle against JaVale McGee. I mean, Channing Frye is not exactly known for a strong defensive ability. So, on one hand, when I've brought this up every time we've done a show, it's the last 3 years to the date almost, that you got to love having Kyrie and Love on the court. It's phenomenal. Their offense is, with LeBron, it's incredibly hard to stop, or maybe even unstoppable. But the defensive liability of Kevin Love and Kyrie has not changed over the last 3 years, and it won't. Everyone knows that Kyrie struggles on defending a pick and roll, and that Kevin Love, who puts in a world of effort on defense, isn't exactly a Klay Thompson, an Iguodala, or a Draymond Green. So, again, it will be very curious to see how the matchups go, because if there's moments where you have Love and Kyrie on the court together and maybe another starter gets in foul trouble like a J.R. Smith or a Shumpert, you're really going to be, you know, struggling to find ways to who do you put on who? Because we all know Kyrie can drop 45 in a game and he can have that swag like he had last year. But now with Durant in the picture, you can't hide Kevin Love, or you can't give LeBron James breathers like he kind of took last year, throwing him kind of the side of the guy. There's no side guy to give a breather to. So the whole defensive intensity in matchups is going to be at a different level for Cleveland this year. And I did enjoy, and this could have been a press comment taken out of word, but the press statement I saw this week was how Tyronn Lue said that the Boston Celtics created more matchups for us defensively that were more tough than Golden State.
Did you read the whole quote, though? Come on. Did you read the whole thing?
Sure.
He was actually giving Brad Stevens a comment, a great boost, because he said the amount of stuff that they did out of nowhere for us, because, you know, with Isaiah out, they switched up their whole thing. So the amount of things that they were doing on the court, Golden State, if they did those things, they'd be better than Boston, but that thing got taken way out. If you read the whole thing, it's completely true.
Oh, okay.
If you read the whole thing, it's completely true.
So with that being said, I'll be very curious to see how he earns his money in this one. You know, what are you gonna? How much time can you get by with, keeping Kyrie and Love on the court all together? Maybe there will be a level of stepping up, but as we all know, that's kind of the weakness. So I guess you go with trading buckets for buckets. But like I said last year, and I'll throw it back to you, last year there were moments where LeBron could kind of drift off on Harrison Barnes because, unfortunately, Harrison Barnes, one of my favorite Tar Heels, was ice cold. He had a very bad final.
Those corner threes didn't quite go down, did they?
No, they
you feel
did
a little bit more confident
all.
With Durant with the corner threes that are just on the wingman position?
No.
A little bit more confident.
Obviously, and Harrison had a very nice year in Dallas. I hope that he continues to progress. But for this conversation, there is not a guy you can just sit on. If you want to take the approach, we're just going to let Klay Thompson shoot. Well, have fun with that. So I'll be very curious to see, Chris, at the matchups. I feel that as I've learned more about basketball, whether from our show, from watching, from coaching this year, from any dynamic I've learned, I feel that the more advanced basketball fans really do look into how a coach uses his bench and how you match up people defensively. Obviously,
especially in professional
pick and roll. I try to pick up and learn stuff from people who know their stuff, and I try to repeat it to well to sound intelligent. But the defensive matchups in NBA are crucially important, especially with how incredibly popular the pick and roll has become. And as I mentioned, that is kind of one of the knocks on Kyrie, of he struggles defending it. And when you have a team like Golden State who can do pick and rolls, and I mean, if you're new to basketball, basically that means that you have a guy set a screen for a guy with the ball, and the guy that sets the screen rolls to the hoop or rolls to the side. So you're making two defenders communicate very quickly as to who's going to cover the guy with the ball or who's going to cover the guy that sets the screen. And it can create chaos. And I say that lightly, but when you have guys doing that are named Durant and Curry or Durant and Clay or Durant and Draymond,
or whatever,
it's incredibly hard to do.
Yeah,
so, if a guy rolls to the hoop, you can follow him. But if the guy who sets a pick rolls to the three-point line, now you got two guys within maybe 10 feet of each other that can bullshit a three. And every NBA team has their own strategy of doing it. Some teams go into the pick and roll. Some teams go over. And this could sound a little X's and O's, but this is a decision that Coach Tyronn Lue has to decide, at least going into game one. Now, clearly you can make adjustments, Chris, as the series goes out, but, do you go under the pick and rolls? Do you try to go over? Do you play a pick and roll differently if it's Durant and Clay compared to, Draymond and Steph? All those little things are going to be crucially important, and if you happen to get Cleveland, where you have Kevin Love and Kyrie guarding two people on a pick and roll, well, for Golden State, that's a huge win. Obviously, LeBron is a freak defender, and he's going to do all he can, but you also cannot afford to wear him out, really, because if you assign LeBron's role to,
It's too late.
There's only
gonna
so
wear
much
him
man
out.
Can do.
The only thing is, wearing him out with all this break, I don't think he's going to be worn out, and they get breaks through these games. There's no back-to-backs. Keep going. I'll let you finish your train of thought.
Sure. Yeah, I get what you're saying, but fatigue, but yes. So just overall, I'm very curious to see that if there's any clever ideas or defensive switches or maybe you alternate minutes between Love and Kyrie or whenever Kyrie gets a rest and you put Love in and obviously vice versa or something. Because if you are –
You always got to have LeBron or Kyrie in the game, first and foremost.
Yes,
in my opinion.
Absolutely. And it's hard to keep Love off the court because the dude has showed so much positive moments in the playoffs this year of hitting threes and really fitting into his niche that we discussed at the start of the show. But now, to wrap up this kind of long pick and roll chant is that do you want to try and go head to head with points and go shot for shot with the Warriors with Kyrie and Love on the court all together as much as you can? Or would you try to find a way, if possible, to work defensive substitutions into games one and two and see how they play out? I would assume you would try some defensive mix-ups and go shot for shot, because if you want to go shot for shot with Golden State, good luck. So I'll make a note, so when we do our show next week, we can talk about it, of how did Tyrone Lue try to make defensive adjustments, and were they successful? Can you steal a game one or two on the road?
Vice versa, too. We got to, we can't just say, well, it's up to Lou, because some of the things he's not going to be able to stop.
No.
But keep going.
That's true.
I got a couple of points here that I don't want to miss, too.
No, but the pick and roll matchups and how Cleveland uses their defensive people and, who does LeBron guard all the time, those will be very fun dynamics where the more you watch basketball, the more you're like, okay, well, there's five guys on the court versus 5-on-5. Okay, well, how do you sub them in and out? And Tyrone Lue, you got your hands full. What are you going to do? What are your chess moves going to be?
So I think, first of all, the pick and roll nowadays, back in the day, and I'm old. Okay, I'm old. So back in the day, I don't want to sit there and say that I didn't walk, uphill in 10 feet of snow to school. Okay, I didn't do that. I'm not that old school. Okay, I'm not going to sit there and say that. But the amount of switches in the NBA now, just in general on defense, but in pick and roll situations and all that, it tells you that they're not as good at overall as a whole on defense. Clearly, we know about the rule changes, yada, yada, yada. But if you're going to bring up, I think you can't put Love, how I like to say you can't put certain things in Harden and Westbrook defensively in the same situation. You can't put Love, Kyrie, in the same category defensively. That's not true, period. And if you're going to bring up Kyrie, which, definitely, you got to bring up Steph Curry then too, because there's plenty of times that Steph got lost on defense as well. He's not a shutdown defender, neither is Kyrie, but I really think the Duke influence and the shot in the eye last year, I'm not making him out to be a great defender by any means, but he is not a poor defender. He is not a poor defender. He's just not. Yeah. He proved it last
year. I'd agree to disagree.
He proved it last year. He's stuck on – go look at the last couple of games, dude. They stuck him on straight up on Curry. So I hear you. When I say poor, I'm not calling him a top 20 defender. See how I went even down to 20? I didn't say top 5 or top defender. But he's not a piece of shit on defense. That's all I'm saying. And Love is way worse on defense assignment-wise, let alone just – moving your feet than he was. That's a fact. Now, there's going to be more one-on-one this year, though, because of Durant. Because of Durant. So your point is well taken about the pick and roll. 100%. 100%. And it is, it's always been there, or not always, but it's been there for a long time in this
sure.
game, but not with this amount of three-point shooters. And when you add Durant, whether it's outside or inside or just Durant, right, the threat of Durant, you made a good point about LeBron. And like I said that before you even said it, as far as you can look at other matchups, you can look at them head-to-head, LeBron has had the advantage. But he's never had to guard him with this amount of talent around him. So that is a whole different ballgame. And that's not to say that Curry's not going to be putting him on – Kyrie on skates on once in a while, and that he's not going to get beat. You're going to – when you guard Golden State, I got news for you. You're going to get beat. You're going to get beat. The pick and roll is going to work a good chunk of the time. That's why they freaking do it all the time. You know what I mean? It just – so to sit there and highlight, if Curry goes for 28, it's a matter of how he got those 28 or 38 points. How many shots did he take? How many threes? Was he 4 of 14 from 3, or was he 7 of 12? You know what I mean? It's about how he gets it. It's about that. So But I do think I think here's what I'm not saying Dellavedova didn't do anything, but he and same with Maskov, right? Okay. And when you say love, to keep love on the court, yes, for sure. I think the key is to either have LeBron on the court or Kyrie on the court at all times. One of those guys have to be in the ball game. They just do, in my opinion. Now, it's different, you know, it's different in a certain amount of game. Let's say they are hot and they're up a chunk and you put them down for 3 minutes real quick. That's different. But I'm saying on average,
yeah.
I do believe because of the threat they both, as a scorer, just in general, you got to have them on the court, at least one of them. Love, yes, he's been important, Marshall, but let's not forget he had two good games last year in the finals out of seven. He missed one, he came off the bench, and then he was mediocre in the other games. Let's not forget that, okay? And then if we're going to bring up Dellavedova was a solid defender, and he also, what did he do in 2015? He added points off the bench. Well, actually, he started after game one, and he added that little 12 to 15 points, right? He was hitting some shots.
Yeah.
That went away, and then it all went away. But Dellavedova, first of all, he didn't play in game seven, Marshall. He didn't enter the game. He had 2 points in game one, his best points or points game was 7 points. He had 2, 7, 2, 2, no points, 3, and didn't play in game 7. And I understand you can't just look at it points-wise, but he did add points off the bench as a point guard, too, and as a starter, let alone, because remember for a second when they're up 2-1, and that's more of my argument here, they were up 2-1, and Dellavedova is because, remember, Dellavedova, in our knee-jerk quick reaction, was all of a sudden the Curry, shut down Curry. He was the stopper, right? Dellavedova was all of a sudden the Curry stopper. He's the only guy that somehow figured out Curry. And then what happened after that? They figured his ass out. It's much like the Celtics in other times that we've seen it, that you all of a sudden didn't know who was going to get the ball with no – well, Love wasn't there, but with no Kyrie, for a second there, you did have to figure out what the hell they were going to do. Okay, they got Bronny, who played out of his mind, but then you're like, okay, shit, I got to worry about some shit I didn't have to worry about. Literally, we scouted Kyrie this whole time. Then Dellavedova comes in and adds a different flair, and he's a much better defender, but he wasn't as much of a factor last year. Just the minutes tell you that, Marshall, just to be honest. And some of that was Kyrie's improved defense, not great shutdown defense. But he belonged last year, and you admitted it just a second ago, he belonged on the court right there with Curry last year in the finals. He more than did, okay? He totally did. Now we go to to Moskov. Okay, he had 2 rebounds in game one. His best game was 5 points and 3 rebounds. And forget the points. 3 rebounds, Marshall. He had 2 rebounds in game three. He didn't play in game four, didn't play in game seven, had 0-0 in game five, had 1 board in game six. And you know why? Because Bogut wasn't there last year, right? And 2 years ago, what happened when they were down 2-1? What'd they do? They featured Iguodala, and they went with the small lineup, right? What do they call it? The killer? What do they call it? The killer lineup or something?
Death lineup, yeah. Death lineup.
Death lineup. They went up with the death lineup. So when you're telling me they're going to miss Moskov down low, when they have a guy that's averaging 11 boards and Trish Thompson as well, they can feature Trish all at five with Love on the court or not. And Love played 2 good games last year. The rest were mediocre or he didn't play. He came off the bench once. So I guess the difference is I can tell you all these differences about Cleveland, and you can even see it last year, to have veterans on the court. To have veterans on the court to do one or two things. Old guys that can't play back-to-back games and all that, but they had them on the court for specific reasons. And so is Jefferson better than Love right now? No, he's not. But last year, as a, what they needed on the court, he was better in spots than Love. He just was. There's no denying that. But you're right. Now they've in, and that's what makes them a little bit more. That's what makes them better this year. They still have those a couple of role players. They still have Williams to be the backup point guard for a couple of minutes here and there. They're deeper as a team. That you can't deny that. The problem is, I could tell you until the sun comes home how different they are. Oh, my God, they're so much better. And they are a better team, even though it didn't look like that in the regular season. They are a better team. The problem is you only had to add one player to make a huge difference, and we know who that is. So that's the problem there, and I think that that's where it gets exploited in general. I could tell you all this stuff, but it really doesn't matter. In my opinion, it matters because they need to at least. That's why they had to shuffle and make trades. I mean, we haven't even brought Korver up. Is he a great defensive player? Hell no. Hell no. He's not. But he is a guy that they haven't had in the past to hit a three. They don't have to worry about J.R. Smith trying to hit every three. We know J.R. Smith needs to be falling out of bounds with a guy in his face to hit threes. If he's wide open,
true,
he's probably going to miss them unless he's hit four in a row or something. Then he's going to go off. So Deron Williams off the bench, point guard, not a great defender, but as a point guard that can run the offense for 3.5 minutes or something like that, I think that is better. It's crazy they got Deron Williams, who doesn't really do much and may not see any time in this thing. But they Richard Jefferson went down on the points this year, no doubt about it. He wasn't averaging a bunch of points anyway. But I think it's the little – I mean, you still have Shumpert to defend. My thing is, I like Zsa. I like these guys, but I don't see – I mean, it's going to be one or the other, you know, goofy guy or Zsa on the court. They're not going to put both of them on the court at the same time in this series. So – that's just one guy, and they may go – the reason why they may have to go small is because of, you know, getting Iguodala in the game. It really – to me, I wouldn't go small lineup right off the bat, but to me, that's where Durant has to use his length. And we're going to see a lot of posting on Durant from LeBron if they want to, if they're actually going to have Durant guard him the whole time or a chunk of the time. But if they're not going to have Durant guard him, well, who's going to guard him? It has to be Iguodala. Well, how do you get Iguodala in the game? Well, you got to sacrifice a center. You're not going to take Draymond out, right? So that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Zsa. I'm not saying McGee won't play a presence because they will. I think they will. But I don't think they're going to miss Mozgov on the count of that. One, he didn't do shit last year. And two, it's because of the death lineup. I mean, that's where I think it is. Let's get into – we both went on long rants. I think we got enough out. Let's – I mean, how is this thing going to – we both are picking Golden State, obviously. What do you think? How many games? That's what it really – it's not about, you know – who, and it's about how, because we both think Golden State's going to win. They for their sake, they better, let's put it that way. They should. They're just too good of a team.
I think the mode, and this is me being more of a fan, I guess, but I think that the motivation, the bitterness that they did suffer last year with being the 73-win team is going to be enough, and I'm actually just going to – I'm gonna pick – I think they sweep. And I think that would be a way to spin the tide because last year was, and all credit due, but all you heard was, I can't believe LeBron beat the, you know, NBA regular season best team record. I think the only way to really roll the tide, you know, and this is just kind of a little dynamics here, but I think would be to come back and sweep the Cavs this year. I mean, obviously, I think Golden State wins, but I actually think they sweep. I think they take care of business at home, and I think that I'm not sure how they get it done, but I do think Golden State sweeps them just for a little bit of a mix-up. I mean, as we've talked about, there's certain X's and O's in this series that, you know, people are going to score, people are going to hit threes. How do you match up on people, blah, 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 you know, and a majority of people are picking the Warriors to win. Just to go out on a limb a little bit.
How much money
sure
can you get on
it,
those Lakers? Because I bet you the odds are pretty good to pick the Lakers. I think the Lakers from the 80s right now would do better than the Lakers they put on the court.
I just know next year when we do our basketball show, we're not talking about anyone's last name Ball. I'll have my Kiffin quota, and I'll have a quota against Ball. But, I'm going Warriors sweep. Obviously, it would be crazy for LeBron to get swept and him and Kyrie, but just my gut feeling it. And I think, obviously, with the way the series ended last year from a Golden State perspective, you know, the cliche you can tell yourself is if Draymond doesn't get suspended, we don't lose the finals. And I think with all that and who they've added and how they're playing, I'm going sweep. The only thing that does scare me about Golden State, we've listed a ton of positives, is it doesn't seem likely that Coach Kerr is going to be in the playoffs, which is a knock on us. Obviously, he communicates with the team, but the spinal tap back injury is something that continues to hinder him. Obviously, I hope the guy, you know, can get better. And in some of those press conferences you've heard, I mean, I've never experienced something like that. But when you can tell from the way the guy talks, it's excruciating. So I'm hoping that maybe he's able to coach it. It doesn't seem likely.
It's
but
not an injury you want. That's for damn sure.
No, it's got to be dynamic. That's just weird. So, but just strictly from X's and O's standpoint, not to obviously, you know, be disrespectful to someone's health, but I doubt he'll be there. So, you know, obviously with Mike Brown as coach, I wouldn't say that he maybe has the craftiness of a way to work this team, but maybe he will. And this is a situation for him where he needs to step up and prove himself, because there will be situations needed where, let's say, Durant does get in foul trouble or Curry gets dinged up or something, you know, whatever. What chess pieces do you make? Obviously, we've talked about how, you know, what is Coach Lou going to do to try to slow down Golden State? Well, if LeBron and Kyrie are hot, what does Golden State do? Or do you go to the depth lineup? So, obviously, I think Mike Brown has his hands full. I think he'll be doing okay, but that's maybe the one negative heading into the playoffs for Golden State, because for all we know, everyone's healthy to the best of our knowledge, and home court advantage and plenty of time to rest. So time to roll. And if maybe by chance Coach Kirk can be on the sidelines, that'd be awesome. If not, you know, the boys got to fight on. But I'm going Golden State in four. What are you thinking, my friend?
They shouldn't even play this series. Just give it to Golden State. That's what you're saying. But I think those two together. I mean, you know, the game six, was it game five or game six where they both went for 40? Was it game?
Six. Seven where Kyrie really went off. So I think it was six.
It must have been six. Either five or six.
I think so.
They both got 40.
I'm not
saying that's happening, but I just think those two, you're not going to lose. I mean, obviously it helps to have game five at home now, whereas in years past that wasn't the case. They changed that sometime in the 80s. I think it was 84 or something. But that helps. You know,
true.
It helps a whole lot. Instead of having, you know, I think overall to push it to six, if it was the old rule, I wouldn't be shocked at six, like completely shocked. But I don't know. Here's what's hard to judge. I needed to see them against the Spurs Different team, different matchup, but still a damn good team. I needed to see them against the Spurs, and we didn't get to see that. We didn't get to see that. The only thing we got to see is when Leonard was in the game, in that game one, we did get to see some things that were like, huh, okay. And when you rely on outside shooting as much, you're going to not shoot that well at times, you know, especially your lead guys, or Curry in general. It's just not going to happen. There's some time, you know. One thing I'll say is game one, for all the beauty of this basketball I talk about, we speak of, I wouldn't doubt if the first quarter is just garbage because both of them had so much rest this year, you know. So I wouldn't doubt if it's, you know, 22-21 with a bunch of shots put up. I wouldn't be shocked at that either. Or maybe the first 10 minutes and then all of a sudden they both go off and they get to 25 apiece or, you know, whatever. But I think Cleveland, LeBron / Kyrie, but especially what LeBron can do from a 30-plus points triple-double, and then Kyrie, I just think that they'll win a game based off that. They'll win a game off that. Now, can they win two? It's tough for me to judge because, like I said, we didn't get to see them pushed. We didn't get to see them pushed, this actual team. We didn't get to see it. When they've been pushed in the past without Durant, we've seen that. We've seen them have bad shooting nights and then bounce back and win and push a game to 5 or 6 series when they're way better than the team, but they just shot bad one of the games. We've seen that, but we haven't seen it with Durant. We haven't seen it with Durant. So, I don't know. You know, I guess you could make an argument of not being tested in the playoffs could hamper them, right? It could. Errol Spence wasn't tested until last weekend, and the first 4 rounds were rough for him. It's the first time he went through any adversity as a fighter. Now, he came through it, but the thing is, these guys have faced adversity in the past, so they've already done that, just not as a unit per se. But I would put my money on 5, but I'll tell you what, I won't be the one shocked at game 6, though. You know, I won't be the one shocked. I wouldn't be shocked that game 5 closed it out, but Cleveland won one of the first 2 games. I wouldn't be shocked at that. That could happen. And then they just make it up on the road. You know, that could totally happen. But I think 5, a slight possibility. I wish I had a computer in front of me. I'd run the numbers on game 6, you know, percentage tile. But I get my BPI and all that, RPI, BPI, TPC, you know, all these deep stats. I say 5. I feel good about 5, so I'll say it. But I wouldn't be shocked with a sweep either. I got to see game 1 and game 2, and then I'd be like, yeah, they could sweep them for sure. You know what I mean? Because that's how you feel it. And you may feel, oh, yeah, this will be 5 after game 1. Yeah, they'll win one of those home games. That's just natural stuff when it comes to a 7-game series. But, yeah, I'll say 5. But next week I may be saying this puppy's going to 6. You know what I mean? Just because, you never know. But anyway, let's wrap it up.
Oh, one question before I wrap it up. This just hit me. Are you surprised that in Vegas that Durant currently is the favorite to be the Finals MVP? Because personally, I think if Golden State wins, you have a 50-50 chance of giving it to Durant or Curry or Iguodala, who wants the time for shutting down LeBron. And obviously, if the Cavs do win the Finals, I think it's going to LeBron or Kyrie. So, were you a little bit surprised that Durant open as the Finals MVP expected favorite to win the award? I guess that threw me for a loop. Could have made an argument for Curry and or LeBron.
That's the first time I'm hearing that. Actually, I didn't know that. So I didn't get thrown for a loop for that much. Here's why. First of all, Vegas wants you to bet your money. You know what I mean? So, hey,
sure.
Okay. I'll put some money out there, you know, whatever. So they got to be provocative at times. 2, LeBron, the Cleveland's not winning this damn series. And are they going to give Braun the MVP in a losing series? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's only happened once. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know what I mean?
It was interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And if you look at how in the playoffs, I'd say in the playoffs, Durant's been their best player.
Okay.
I think that's a fair statement. That doesn't mean Curry didn't go off for 40. But as far as consistency, rebounding, the whole nine – and like you said, the mixture of them, yeah, he went off, dude. He's been going off. He's been playing very consistent. So a little surprising. I would have probably thought they'd put, Curry first. Yeah, it is a little surprising, but I'm not thrown off by it for those reasons. But by the way, we're available on iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts. That's what they changed it to. Tune in, Player FM as well. It's pretty big. One more, Stitcher as well. Those are the key ingredients to go along with blogtalkradio.com/RoboRadio. So you can listen to it anytime, archived at any time. Like I said, we're going to have a show next week. We'll have a wrap up show as well for the NBA. So that we'll have this one and two more probably, and then we'll have one for the draft and one for free agency. So it'll be kind of spread out, obviously, because free agency is like a wait-and-see game. We're always texting each other like, well, there's just not, you know, the dominoes haven't fallen yet, you know, so we got to wait. So basically, once the dominoes fall, you can pretty much bet that the free agency show will come up pretty quick after that.
And I think we're only about 94 days from college football kicking off. So it's crazy.
It's less than
that, my friend.
It's less than that. It's less than that.
And we're closer to seeing Texas go to USC, which I might even try to go out to that game. I've been surrounded by Texas. I think it'd be kind of fun maybe sneak out to LA for a weekend and boo that ball guy that they're going to probably draft. But anyways, thanks as always for listening. Again, as usual, I hope everyone has a good and healthy week of good news. Enjoy the hoops. It does feel like it's probably going to feel like about a month off from basketball, but I get you guys set the finals up nonetheless. Grab some friends, grab some drinks, and get tuned in for game one because, as Chris said, that maybe that will be the closest game of the series. And if you're a Cavs fan and can steal that one, the media will be jumping over.
Oh, my God.
It'll be
LeBron
something.
Will overtake Jordan too. By the way, no Memorial Day weekend, no playoffs. That freaking sucks, dude. That's first time in a long time I could say Memorial Day weekend, no freaking conference finals. That shit has sucked.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna watch the Nationals. Okay, and sad they're not even playing in D.C. But I'm going to watch some baseball this afternoon. And as you mentioned nicely at the start of the show, rest in peace to those who have fought for our country. Day that we all should, you know, be thankful we live in this great country that we do. So on that note, I have nothing else to say. We'll be back next week. Have a good day. Peace.